I suppose it's only fair for me to tell you a little bit about myself before I start this off. As you can probably assume, I can't identify who I am, and I can only give a few details about where I work. The reason I'm telling you all of my experience is because of an overwhelming feeling of existential dread that has seized me since the incident. I'm a man who never really believed in gods or devils. I suppose you could call me more of an agnostic than an atheist, though. After this, though, after what I've seen, I'm terrified of what exists beyond this world. 2 weeks is what it's taken for me to gather my thoughts, for me to think about my next steps. I'm not writing this to cause panic, though that is what it will inevitably lead to. I suppose that matters little in the grand scheme of things. So, I guess, just sit back and try to enjoy this. Because if you are lucky, you won't end up like me. You won't be constantly thinking of your sheer insignificance in the scale of cosmic machinations beyond your control. I was eating dinner with my girlfriend on the night I received the most important call of my life. Homemade spaghetti and meatballs, paired with a lovely, sweet red wine. My girlfriend, let's call her Maria, can cook like few others can. She has a real gift for it. At the time, I was considering popping the question to her, but my obsession with my work was eating up most of my time. Tonight was one of the first days of the month where I hadn't been poring over astrological data, or at the Ganymede telescope, peering into the expanses of the universe, hoping to catch a glimpse of something I could write a paper on. You see, I'm a college student, trying to get my PhD, and logging in lots of hours with Professor Brenner at the Ganymede was a great way to earn credit for this semester. Or, at least it was, before his accident. Since then, I've drifted away from my girlfriend and sort of become solely introverted. Even more so than I was. We're not broken up, and I'm trying to do better, but there's a dread now that lingers in the edges of my psyche. It is an awareness that I have glimpsed at something truly unknown, but I'll get to that. Professor Brenner was on the other end of the call, and he was almost out of breath from his excitement. He was yelling and raving about light bending at a certain point in space, screaming that we may have uncovered a black hole, or even more incredibly, the birth of one. I told Maria what was going on, and she understood the significance of such a possible discovery. Having been with an astrologist for so long, I guess some of my knowledge of such subjects rubbed off on her. I wish now with all my being that she'd made me stay. No matter if it made me resent her even in the slightest. Rushing over didn't take very long. Traffic was light that evening, and the clouds above were completely absent, giving way to a view of a glorious full moon, gleaming with splendor and mystique. I pulled into the Ganymede's lot, not at all surprised to see a few other vehicles already parked. Professor Brenner had many colleagues he'd like to share this discovery with, and I was honored to be counted among them. I stepped out of my vehicle and stuffed my hands into my pockets, giving a shiver and a sigh as the cool night air greeted me. It was unusually frigid this evening, with the temps being as low as 33 degrees Fahrenheit, causing my breath to steam in the air. As I began walking towards the facility, I got this terrible feeling in my gut, like a rock had just dropped into it. I looked around, wondering if I was just sensing the presence of someone else in the lot. All was quiet, as very few animals and insects would be present due to the cold weather, giving the area an almost eerie vibe. I looked at the building, feeling a chill travel up my spine. Definitely not from the cold, though. Something felt wrong, but I couldn't place my finger on it. I just shrugged and went on through the security door after sliding my keycard through the pad, hearing the familiar ding as the security lights turned green on it, followed by a metallic clank as the lock released. Inside was thankfully much warmer, and I rubbed my hand together through my gloves as I grinned widely. There really is nothing quite like getting toasty after being out in the cold. Just feels great. The interior was just as bland as ever, with a few Christmas decorations visible, likely as a joke because of the cold fronts moving over us. The overhead lighting was always just a little too harsh, with that familiar buzz you'd recognize if you ever worked in retail, one of my few complaints about working with Professor Brenner. The smell of freshly brewed coffee and laughter caught my attention, no doubt on the upper levels, closer to where the Ganymede's powerful scope could be looked through. It seemed I was a little late to the party. The Ganymede isn't quite like the Hubble, namely in that it's a bit smaller and more compact, with a facility built around it, taking up less space and housing less staff. This kept operating costs down, and the machine was still an extremely powerful and useful piece of scientific equipment. Funded mainly through various research grants and partially through Professor Brenner's own family fortune, the Ganymede was currently set to study the positions of various celestial bodies and other phenomena. Professor Brenner had always hoped to see evidence of two planets colliding, or maybe even the formation of a proto-galaxy. For him to even suggest we might be seeing the birth of a black hole was no less incredible. There was no telling what we could learn from such an event. It could literally not occur for the rest of our lives. If this was it, we had to be there and catalog what happened. As I climbed the stairs, a couple other students turned to regard me, waving and nodding in greeting. Brenner, whom sat prominently at the control panel in the center of the room, turned in his swivel chair and grinned widely.
"Michael, you're finally here. Come take a look."
He waved me over, not moving from his throne. The gesture made me laugh a bit. I hurried over to the panel, gazing at various monitors set up to display exactly what the Ganymede was pointing at. For a little explanation, the Hubble and Ganymede use a type of wide-field camera, capable of viewing patches of space in infrared and ultraviolet, basically providing an exceptionally detailed look at nearby galaxies and nebulae. The Ganymede, of course, isn't as powerful, and thus isn't able to peer as far, such as the Hubble's deep-field imaging, which can provide a glimpse into some of the furthest reaches of the known universe. Without going into too much detail about the data displayed on four separate monitors, I saw exactly what he was talking about. In infrared, it looked like a distortion, a water droplet in a sea of multicolored lights. Normally, this would likely be regarded as just another star, but it seems to have a halo of energy residue forming around it. Several pictures on Google show this kind of thing in effect, such as when a black hole siphons off the energy of a nearby star. It's insanely cool to see in a picture, mind-blowing to glimpse in person. Professor Brenner popped open a champagne bottle, filling all our glasses before holding his own high up.
"I know we're not supposed to drink on the job, but I think tonight warrants a slight tweak of the rules. Ladies and gentlemen, to us, for all the hard work we've done here, and to our incredible discovery. No one could have possibly imagined the Ganymede would find something like a newly burst black hole, but history has been made once again in the scientific community."
We all drained our glasses, more or less in one gulp, and began to chant amongst ourselves. I made my way over to Professor Brenner, my mind swimming with various questions and curiosities.
"Ah, Michael, you look rather inquisitive."
He had a habit of saying that when I wanted to ask him something. "How long has the Ganymede been observing this formation?"
"Honestly, about a day,"
he said, setting back down in his chair. A bit of champagne sitting on his lap. A bit of champagne sitting on his lips.
"I took so long to notify everyone because I wasn't sure it would even be there in the next few hours or not. Only when it kept a sustained form of sorts was I sure about what I was seeing."
So you think this is definitely a black hole? He shrugged his shoulders and smiled, which usually meant, of course.
"There are plenty of other things it could be, but the fact it matches the general behavior and shape of observed black holes leads me to think it's exactly that."
Mind if I get another look?
Of course. Look all you like, Michael.
We've got plenty of screenshots now as proof. I smiled and made my way over to the monitors again, tilting my head as I noticed something different. That couldn't be right. Maybe I'd had a little too much to drink. I put my hands on the desk and stared at each screen, my eyes going wide. It was gone. The entire formation had completely disappeared, not even leaving residual bands of energy as evidence of its existence. No, that couldn't be right. Black holes left some sort of mark on whatever place they'd formed. My mind jumped to the conclusion that perhaps we had discovered something completely different. That could mean a far more interesting subject for us to research, as we had proof to back our sighting. Professor Brenner? My voice croaked a bit, which made him turn his head sharply, which in turn made everyone else look at me. He didn't say anything, simply setting down his glass and walking over to me, grunting as he got up. He knew something was wrong just by the sound of my voice. His face contorted into a look of sheer disbelief as he stared at each of the four monitors, all displaying seemingly empty space. What the hell? Michael, did you click on something? No, Professor. I literally just walked over here. I got a little annoyed. He immediately looked to me to blame. Maybe the system is frozen. He moved the mouse and gave a loud sigh as he saw the cursor moving normally. A few of my colleagues came over, all alarmed at the prospect that our discovery was now gone. I just stepped back and watched as Professors Brenner, Nikki, and Alex gathered around the screen, all trying to figure out what had gone wrong. We still have all the evidence we need. Does anything change? I asked, already preparing to receive some backlash from the frustrated staff. No, I suppose not. Still, it would have been nice to keep gathering data on it, because now it throws my black hole theory completely out the window. Professor Brenner had recollected himself in short order, as he usually did when things got heated. He'd had a heart attack some years earlier and tried to curb his frustration and anger whenever it surfaced. Then, just what the hell was it? Asked Professor Alex, running his fingers through his distractingly greasy blonde hair. There was a collective silence in the room, everyone no doubt lost in thought as they tried to form their own theories. Professor Brenner was the first one to break the silence. Let's try adjusting the Ganymede, perhaps. If we're more than a little lucky, we can find it again. The odds are pretty overwhelming that it's still in the same local cluster we found it. So all we need to do is adjust the direction of the scope accordingly. It seemed like quite the shot in the dark, but his logic was sound. Nothing could move out of a star system in mere minutes. So if this thing still existed and hadn't burned itself out, we still had a chance of finding it. I wasn't cleared to operate the control panel for the Ganymede, so the most I could do was stand around and lend my emotional support to the cause, however much good that actually did. We all watched as Professors Brenner, Alex, and Nikki went about adjusting the magnification and position of the scope, making the most minute of changes to keep the view within the same cluster of stars they had been viewing. None of them knew exactly what they were looking for now, just an unusual anomaly that eradicated their black hole talk, but would perhaps lead to an even more significant discovery. They had to guess what cardinal direction it could have possibly shifted to, which could mean looking in one spot for days if even the slightest positional calculation was off. After arguing back and forth for a couple minutes, they agreed upon a general set of coordinates, a starting point. At worst, they'd find nothing, but we still have proof of what we'd seen, and at best, we'd discover the strange spot again and see how long it stayed put. A few of my colleagues had gathered around, bringing a few chairs over for us to sit. I snacked on a granola bar as Professor Alex spoke the coordinates to Brenner and Nikki, who began inputting them into a terminal, making just the slightest adjustments to the Ganymede's positioning. It took a few long, painstaking minutes before the procedure was complete. A miscalculation could cause the viewer to see an entirely different area of space, quite counterproductive to our current objective. This was when I knew something terrible was about to happen. I couldn't pinpoint the sudden feeling of abject terror that came over me, but it seemed I wasn't the only one who was suddenly very uncomfortable. "Professor Brenner," I began, but was cut off as he went to go look through the scope. Something in the back of my mind told me to run after him, to pull him away from it before he gazed through it. I don't know why, but I felt like he was walking to his doom. I was frozen in place, my legs refusing to move as I simply watched him walk over to the viewing scope. The scope itself was hooked up to several monitors, and whatever was being viewed could be quickly cast to the four screens, but with the press of a button. How lucky we were that the monitors always shut off whenever a new set of instructions were input into the Ganymede. Alex and Nikki looked at us. Their faces betrayed their bewilderment at the sudden hesitation and fear they now clearly saw in all of us. Slowly, they began to feel it too, and turned to warn Professor Brenner. They yelled at him, but he continued forward without hesitation, as if entranced, as if something on the other side of that scope was calling out to him. What happened next, I still have nightmares about. At first, everything seemed normal, just Professor Brenner sitting in his chair and looking through the scope. But as the seconds ticked on, we all knew something was off. I don't know if I was the first to notice, but there was a muscle spasm through his shoulder, a slight twinge that made my heart race. Then his other shoulder, much harder this time, like he was being yanked back. In a few seconds, his entire body was convulsing violently, yet his head stayed glued to the scope, almost completely unmoving, while the rest of his body shook wildly. That's when I smelled burnt copper. I don't know how it happened, but Brenner's face caught fire while he was looking through the scope. He didn't scream, didn't make a single sound as his limbs spasmed erratically. The fire was a strange, magenta color, and just looking at it burnt painful after images into my vision. It slowly crawled up along the side of his head, the smell of burning meat now filling the room. We should have acted. I should have done something, but the horror of what we were seeing must have frozen us in place, transfixed by the impossible thing that was unfolding before us. I saw that he was mouthing something, his lips working silently as his face smoldered, flakes of charred skin peeling off. "Go get a fucking extinguisher," someone yelled, and I heard the shuffling of feet behind me. I gulped hard and took a step forward, knowing that what we were witnessing was far outside the realm of what we could possibly understand. Human combustion came to mind, but the strangely colored flames, erratic muscle movements, and a complete lack of pain response baffled me. Then, Professor Brenner lifted his head, grasping at the terminal so hard I heard the crunch of several fingers. He was still mumbling wordlessly, though I couldn't tell if it was a cry for help or the ravings of a mind in agony. For reasons I couldn't explain, the flames hadn't consumed his entire head, and instead burned brightly all along his face, most of his hair oddly spared from the heat. The sight of his blackened flesh and the smell of burning human skin made me sick to my stomach, and I so desperately felt the need to vomit. Bile rose in the back of my throat, and I gasped as I saw him lift his hands into the air. What fingers that weren't fractured seemed to clutch at something unseen, and, to my horror, I began to see indentations on his sleeves. Something was grasping back at him. But for the life of me, I couldn't see it. How was any of this possible? Could this have just been a nightmare? Obviously, my luck just isn't that great, so it could only ever be my worst realization. We were witnessing a human being interacting with something supernatural, all spurred on by whatever he had seen through that scope. Where the invisible tendrils touched his bare hands, the skin had split open, pouring blood onto the floor. Whatever gripped him was reaching inside his flesh, feeling around, invading a human body for some unknown purpose. Suddenly, Professor Alex came back, running into the room, and briefly paused as he watched his colleague, gazing in horror at what was happening. He gathered his courage and approached Brenner cautiously, extinguisher firmly in hand. "Brenner!" he called out, now only a few feet away. I could see he was trembling, sweat glistening on his forehead, no doubt the after effects of an adrenaline surge. Brenner didn't respond, his skin still peeling away as he was dissected. "Fuck this," I heard Alex say, gripping the nozzle and pulling the pin, then taking a deep breath before he depressed the handle, causing a stream of white foam to spray out onto the partially immolated Brenner. The foam never made it, as a brief flash of violet light evaporated the stream in midair. We all gasped and stepped back, and I quickly noted what was unmistakably a defense mechanism. There were scorch marks along the ceiling and floor, where a wave of intense heat had manifested out of nowhere and dispersed just as quickly. Brenner had moved ever so slightly, now facing Alex. That charred, rictus grin so horribly visible. I knew something terrible was happening to him, and I think Alex did too, as he tried to step back. What happened next? It was just a blur of motion and screaming. I kept going over the motions in my head, trying to understand what was happening, but I cannot process the fluidity of motion on the level that Brenner was suddenly capable of. Brenner had closed the gap, and with motions too quick to follow, had effectively flayed part of Alex's upper chest and right shoulder, tearing off clothes, skin, and flesh alike. As Alex fell back, obviously too shocked to register the damage, Brenner's hand lightly brushed against his face, causing ribbons of skin and muscle to fly off. Alex hit the ground and started convulsing, the blood loss already devastating as crimson sprayed onto the floor from his ripped torso and torn face. A few people screamed and ran out, but I was too stupid to do something so logical. I had to see this. I was starting to piece together what was going on, if even just a small fragment of a picture too large for me to even be capable of comprehending. Brenner's fingers were transformed. The bones in his hands had erupted through his fingertips, forming five viciously curved sickles that still had strands of Alex's own face hanging from them. As I watched with morbid fascination, the bony blades withdrew back into Brenner's hands, the skin still split and bleeding from wherever they came through. Whatever Brenner had become was now looking down at Alex's form, as if primed to unleash another brutal attack. By some incredible miracle or measure of pure luck, Alex was still breathing, but clearly unconscious, though his blood loss was clearly significant. It didn't seem grave enough to put his life in immediate danger, but I wasn't sure such grievous wounds would clot in time without aid. It took me a moment to realize that Brenner was staring at him. His head had moved too quickly for me to notice as I felt my stomach clench in sheer terror. I wanted to look away, but I was transfixed by his blackened gaze. By the sight of this man I once called my mentor, turned now into some gruesome aberration by the machinations of a force or intelligence far beyond me. It stepped towards me, causing me to take a few steps back. I wanted to run. I wanted to bolt down the stairs and out the door as fast as I could. But my survival instincts were screaming at me to stay put. I had attracted the attention of something truly alien, and to run at that moment would have likely been the end of me. "No," a voice inside me had said. Brenner still had to be there, locked away within the confines of his own mind as the puppeteer pulled his strings. I had to reach him somehow. I had to get through. I clenched my fists and took a step forward, noting the posture and stance of Brenner's body. He was hunched over slightly, right leg in front of the other at an odd angle, his arms by his sides as if they were limp, his head tracking me, his body unmoving as I inched my way closer. I watched with mild fascination as lights and shadows danced around, the violent flame that had engulfed his face casting its ethereal glow to every corner of the room. It didn't seem threatened, but I didn't want to push my luck. It was now or never. "Professor Brenner, please, I know you were in there. Can you hear me?" There was no response. only a slight twitch as his name was mentioned. I needed to try another approach. Brenner, do you remember me? It's Michael, your student. This time I got a spasm out of it, his charred eyelids widening momentarily. Michael, your student. Remember how I'd always bring you hot chocolate and cookies during the cold months of class? He reached for me suddenly, ruined fingers splayed apart, as if beckoning me closer. I couldn't come closer. I didn't want that thing getting its claws on me, even if it might help my friend. My words were working to a degree, so I decided to pursue that avenue farther. Remember your wife, Allie? His lips parted this time, and I could see he was mouthing something to me. I'm not an expert at lip reading, but I could swear he was saying, "Make it stop." A chill went down my spine, and I felt my legs go numb. I hadn't figured Brenner was still conscious, still aware of what was happening to his body, completely at the mercy of this entity that now possessed him. The very notion that he could feel his flesh burning, his bones breaking and reshaping, agonies that no living person should ever experience. A look of abject dread reflected on his face for the briefest of moments, before fading back into pure neutrality. His eyes had completely burned out, and only black pits of charred flesh stared back at me. A blessing for me, honestly. I couldn't have dealt with the horror I knew I would have seen in his eyes in that moment before his humanity sank back into the unknowable force that had consumed him. It had taken control of him once again, as he began to slowly drift off from the ground. I stared in complete disbelief as the soles of his shoes lost contact with the white tile floor. Blood and ash settled onto the floor below. As he ascended several feet, his shoulders and head arched back, staring at the ceiling that was now only a few feet above him. I was the only witness for what came next. Brenner's head snapped down at me, focused solely on my presence. I suddenly lost all awareness of my surroundings, eyes locked with the dark holes of what used to be my professor's eyes. The world around me melted away, and I watched in creeping dread as the violent flames surrounding his head began to snake towards his eye sockets. They seemed to squirm and sputter, slowly burning across his already blackened visage. The dark pits glowed from within, the same ethereal color as the flames. The veins in his face, head, and neck lit up with a sickening, entrancing light, and I knew, without a doubt, that whatever remained of Brenner was now forever gone. Now, with the flames acting as eyes, I felt every hair on my body stand straight as I came under the gaze of something primordial. I was a minnow, caught in the eye of a leviathan. For several long moments, I stared at it, and likewise, it stared back. The room was distractingly silent, all save for the sounds of crackling flesh and whispering fire. I felt drawn towards the eyes, as if the dancing embers within beckoned me to untold sights I could only ever dream of. Everything just seemed so mundane. My fears and terror seemed to be plucked from me, replaced by a mounting sense of wonder and curiosity. What could I learn from this alien intelligence? Was there something that it wanted from me? At the time, I hadn't noticed that my feet had left the ground. I didn't register that I was in fact getting closer to Brenner. I'd been captivated and struck dumb by those otherworldly embers, and now they were tugging me in like a hooked fish. Those eyes, those colors, they held within them the promise of something far beyond me. Beyond anything that humanity understood. Stars glimmered in the dancing blaze, like distant portals to our dreams, calling us, beckoning to be explored. It felt as if every nerve in my body were being massaged in warm honey, every tense muscle caressed by appendages I had no name for. Yet, the pleasure and ecstasy building inside were all the same. This was addiction. This was obsession. This was a raw, primal need. This realization in the back of my mind broke through the haze, just enough for me to catch a glimpse of something else in those gateways. It was a fleeting glance, But beyond the unimaginable colors and dazzling celestial phenomena, there was something else. Eyes. An uncountable number, with widely varying pupils and sclera, all staring back at me. Maws filled with millions of teeth, yawned and gaped apart, eager to devour and consume. Appendages reaching towards me, bubbling and spasming into countless horrid shapes and forms. I screamed in sheer terror, the spell broken as my mind tried to register what was gazing at me from light years away. I was dropped instantly, hitting the floor with a loud thud, making me yelp out in pain as I landed on my back, banging my head against the ground. Luckily, the fall hadn't been enough to knock me out or cause any serious damage. The human skull is pretty thick, especially mine. I sat up, rubbing the back of my head and groaning, looking upwards again at Brenner's hovering form. It looked down upon me, the expression on its face one of disappointment. It started towards me, and I gasped, scrambling backwards on the floor as best I could to get away. Eventually, I came to an abrupt, painful stop as I slammed into the back of a cabinet, knocking the breath right out of me. In between gagging and coughing, I watched in dread as the corpse of Brenner stopped before me, his mouth wide open. What controlled him worked his jaw up and down as if discovering the feature of a toy for the first time. In a horrifying display, his teeth smashed together several times, breaking off bits and pieces of enamel, which fell to my feet. With his gums bleeding and teeth in pieces, what lurked within Brenner finally spoke. The words, they were like needles in my ears, sounds that no human should ever hear or understand. Yet, their meaning to me was perfectly understood. Sound flowed forth, garbled and screeching. Yet, in my mind, the words were etched into memory, their meaning laid bare. We hunger. After the brief message, the blaze within Brenner died instantly. His body began relinquishing from the grip of whatever monstrosity had once held him. He landed on the floor, tipping over and hitting the ground, completely slack. I had no hope that Brenner was still alive. One look at his body told me that he would never breathe again. I was thankful, at least, that he was no longer suffering in the presence of that thing. I slowly stood up, my legs shaking like crazy as I tried to steady myself by grabbing onto the cabinet behind me. I tasted copper, realized the air had a foul smell to it, like burnt plastic and ozone. I wiped my nose, horrified to see a smear of blood on my hand. There was no telling what lingered in the air after its departure, but I knew sticking around was a bad idea. My eyes flicked over to the stumped form of Professor Alex, silently thanking God when I saw his chest briefly rise and fall. He was alive, somewhat, and the flow of blood had slowed significantly. I stumbled over to him, doing well to keep clear of Brenner's mangled, burnt corpse, giving one final glance to his horrifically charred face, his empty sockets staring at the ceiling. I grabbed Alex's legs, starting to slowly drag him out of the room, blood spilling from my nose and mouth. I felt lightheaded, like something was going haywire inside my body. I had a migraine that felt like my skull was being torn apart. By all accounts, I should have passed out, but somehow, I kept on going. Getting Alex down the stairs was difficult. Thankfully, the effects of whatever lingered in that room seemed to lessen considerably in the stairwell. I took things slowly, being careful not to drop the professor as I pulled him backwards, my arms locked under his armpits. It felt weird having his blood on me, but I just couldn't muster any kind of reaction. I was still trying to process a cosmic manifestation and Brenner's death, so all I could do for my fellow scientist was an apathetic numbness. Halfway down, a couple pairs of hands gripped onto Alex, helping alleviate his weight considerably. I didn't care whom it was who aided me, didn't even glance at the blurred shapes. I think they were talking to me, but all I could hear was muffled gibberish. I had to have been in complete shock, as nothing seemed to register with me. And that memory just seems so brief. Later on, I found out it was Carmelia and Anthony who helped me. And they had been hiding in the stairwell, brave enough to not entirely flee the scene. I think I blacked out at that point, as my next memory was of coming to in a chair, a firm grasp tugging on my shoulder as a bright light shined in my eyes. I gave a horrified gasp and jerked back, slamming my chest against the wall behind me. I started hyperventilating as I looked all around in panic. I saw several people I didn't recognize, some wearing police uniforms and some dressed in medical garb, likely a doctor and a couple nurses, along with a few of my colleagues who made it out. My heart raced and my mind started digging through everything I could remember. I licked my lips, finding them completely dry. I tried to talk, but a raspy cough was all I could manage. Thankfully, a nurse handed me a cup of water, which I immediately downed in one huge gulp. I gave a loud gasp as I felt that cool liquid soothe me, my thirst, at least, being one thing satiated. As soon as I could, an endless stream of questions poured forth from my lips. One after another came ceaselessly, my eyes darting around to each person, desperate for answers as they eyed me with what appeared to be a suspicion and fear. One of the police officers, a heavy-set man with dark skin and a kind face, placed his hand on my shoulder reassuringly. "Son, I know this might be hard to answer. What happened in here?" I felt my heart skip a beat, and I lowered my head. "That's right. Brenner was dead. And Alex was... Alex, was he alive still? Had I gone through that nightmare with nothing good to show for it?" Reading my panicked expression, Carmelia stepped forward and answered my unspoken question.
"Hey, you saved Professor Alex. We got him into an ambulance just in time, and they managed to stabilize him. He's been given a couple of blood transfusions, and they're planning a complete skin graft for the damage."
I choked up a bit and groaned deeply, trying to hold back tears of relief. I cannot imagine how I must have looked in that instance, because I felt like a walking corpse. Once again, the officer asked me what happened, in a significantly firmer tone of voice. I recognized that they were trying to do their jobs, to try and grasp the bizarre, horrific scene they no doubt had walked through after my extraction. I was able to answer this time. Then I noticed something. Standing in the back of the room was a man dressed in a clean, form-fitting, all-black uniform. He stood in front of the door, his hands clasped together in front. He was obviously in great shape, almost athletic, judging by his proportions. And I had no doubt what he had been sent here to do. On his hip was a holstered handgun, but that isn't what drew my attention. His eyes bore into me, unblinking and cold, but not filled with malice or hate. He stepped forward, and everyone parted to allow him through. I flinched back as he towered over me, and I could feel the room grow tense just from this man's presence. He gazed down at me, offering a brief smile that showed his two white teeth.
"Michael, I need you to tell me what happened. I couldn't stall anymore, and I would probably be in some deep shit if I wasn't honest with this man."
I scanned the room for a moment, looking at everyone behind the hulking man in black. As if sensing my hesitation, he glanced back and issued a very commanding order. "Everyone out. Michael and I are going to have a chat." Not much else to say on this matter. I had to tell him everything. I spared no detail, delving into the most horrifying minutiae of what occurred in that room. For the agent's part, he didn't even flinch, not even when I detailed Brenner's possession by some other intelligence. He waited a few minutes after I'd stopped speaking, and I wondered if he was going to shoot me on the spot. I'm not really sure I would have minded that. He gave a brief grunt and reached into his pants pocket, retrieving a little white card
He handed it to me, and I glanced at it, seeing only a number listed on the front, complete with a black border along the edges. If you see anything else, feel free to give us a ring. Until then, try to keep this to yourself. We'll be watching. Before I could say anything, the man turned around and walked right out the door, leaving me alone with my troubled thoughts. What had just happened? I could guess as much that he was the U.S. government in some conspiracy, but something about the way he acted even made me question that. His lack of any emotional reaction to my story led me to a very troubling conclusion. This man had seen worse, and perhaps maybe Brenner wasn't the only person to have discovered that thing. So much of my life changed on that day. My sense of self, my view of the world, and what lies beyond our little blue rock. We've spent so much time trying to peer beyond the veil of darkness, to see which one of those pinpricks of light might contain something as intelligent as us. Now, I wonder, what if we're just laying out the welcome mat for something terrible? There's something else out there. This I've come to learn. I don't know its intent, but with how Brenner and Alex ended up, I can't in all good conscience be positive. I guess things have been pretty mundane since the incident. Brenner's death and Alex's wounds were officially chalked up to a gas canister explosion at the observatory. The whole area had been cordoned off since, and everyone is forbidden from going near. Alex hadn't spoken much. He's healing well, but his demeanor has altered. I see it in his eyes, a fear he can barely mask, horrible knowledge that now haunts him. He's been routinely missing days of work, but the college board thankfully refuses to hold him accountable. The other students and staff who were present have either transferred elsewhere or just pretended it never happened. Even though the silence is like a knife to my heart, people can't find out. Most of you won't believe what you've just heard anyway, so I should be safe. Are any of us safe, though? For the past few nights, I've laid outside in the grass, staring up at the stars, wondering, when I was a kid, that activity used to fill me with excitement and wonder. Now, I feel nothing but dread and apprehension. I look up at all those little dots of light and silently wonder which one of them is now closer to us than before.